Hello and welcome back to the Wheel Talk podcast. My name is Abby Mickey and we're here to talk about women's professional road cycling. With me, as always, my beautiful co-hosts, Gracie Elvin.
Hey. Always wonder who you're going to pick first, but I was ready.
This is my favorite game. Lauren Rowney.
You've picked Gracie, I think, like the last two or three times. So yeah. G'day, everyone. Good to be back.
Well, it's you next time now, if I remember.
I'll be waiting.
Leaving over myself.
When you started with beautiful, I was like, it's Gracie.
Oh, Lauren, you're beautiful too.
We're all beautiful.
Yeah. In our own ways. No, seriously, talking to Hannes about this, about I think my son is beautiful, Harry. I'm like, he's just like, since he's born, he's just one of those beautiful babies. He's got these gorgeous long eyelashes and everything else. Like Louis, as soon as Louis came out, I was like, ooh. You know what I mean? You're going to have personality, Louis.
He's going to grow into it.
Yeah, he's going to grow into it. He is super cute.
Apparently I looked exactly like my dad, so
they do that.
Yeah,
the babies, they do that on purpose. The nurse at the hospital told me specifically that the babies look like their dads so the dads don't leave them on a park bench.
But yeah, unfortunately for my mom, I did. I grew into my face as well.
We're going to talk about Trofeo Alfredo Binda, a really good addition, I think, but we'll talk about it. Get into a little news elsewhere, including the new Vuelta Femenina route, which was announced, and look forward to Bruges de Pana, which is coming up next weekend.
No, Thursday.
Coming up Thursday.
Yeah.
What day? Oh my God, you're right. It is a midweek.
Midweek.
On Thursday.
Yep. Back in the north.
Oh, man, I need to adjust my brain. Trofeo Alfredo Binda. It was a super exciting race. There was basically attacks nonstop the entire time, but in the end, it came down to a reduced bunch sprint won by Elisa Balsamo for the second time and Trek's fourth win in a row. Let's talk about it. I think I want to start with Elisa Balsamo because I think that you cannot overstate how impressive this performance was from her. Not only did she manage to get back into that group every single time the climbers punched it on the climbs throughout the circuits, and they had one more circuit this year, so it was, in theory, a little bit harder than it has been in the past. And even though we had a pretty decently sized group, the same size group that she won from in 2022 when she won, the race, I think, was a lot harder. There was a lot more attacks, a lot more significant attacks that went. Little Trek, from what I could tell, spent a lot less time controlling the race and more reacting to what was going on and holding it together for Elisa. But I think a lot of it was that she just was able to tack on the back of that group and get back on every time she was dropped on the climbs. And then not only that, but then to beat Lotte Kopecky in the sprint when she got boxed in behind Caroline Swinkels and had to pause sprinting for a second to get around her and then come through. It was just an incredible performance from Balsamo, and I think is really good going into the next chunk of classics in Belgium and the Netherlands. Well, Belgium.
Yeah, it was a great finale. Definitely an active race, which was good to see because, you know, sometimes if there's an added lap or added distance, it can make the race negative if people haven't done it before. But I felt like there was plenty of riders that wanted to, you know, be on the front foot for the day. So, like, quite a few teams, quite a few different names. But you're right, Abby, I think Balsamo really was the classy bike rider that won. Also had some really good help from teammates, particularly Van Anroy. I think Sheeran was, you know, probably looking for a potential opportunity for herself, but you could tell she was mostly in that super support role, and she did so much, especially in that last lap. And you could tell that they were on their radios, and Balsamo was making sure that she knew that she was still there, and I think that really played into it, having really good communication and seemingly a good team plan around Balsamo.
Yeah, what I really enjoyed was the free range. Some of the riders, like Niamh Fisher-Black, I thought she was like the MVP for the day. She was phenomenal. I was hoping she would be the rider that would slip away eventually and get the win, actually, because she is one of my draft picks. But she had a great day out, and it was good as well to see Niamh Bradbury also carrying that form that we've seen from the Australian summer. as well as the UAE tour. So she's continued to perform, which has been great because it's been a few months now. So I really enjoyed watching, like, particularly from SD Works Pro Time, them giving a rider like Neve the opportunity to go and see if she can create something in the race, but then, of course, backing Capecchi at the finish, because Capecchi wasn't very active. She was just, like, surfing, just putting herself in the right position. So for me, it was good to see Capecchi not win the sprint. And actually, I backed Balsamo ahead of her. Because I think we've discussed this, and Abby, you've talked about it a few times, that the physiology of Capecchi now, she's really has shifted away from more of that sprinter to an all-rounder who is almost becoming a GC rider too.
Yeah, I mean, I think we've seen good sprints from her this year, like at UA Tour leading out Wiebes, but then when it came down to this, she just didn't have it against Balsamo, and she went earlier than Balsamo. Balsamo was on her wheel and well placed, but I feel like a year ago or so, Capecchi, that effort from Capecchi would have meant that she would win, and Balsamo wouldn't have been able to come around her. So I was interested to see that happen because Capecchi was a late last minute entry into the race for SC Works Pro Time. And I feel the way that they were racing, it wasn't for Capecchi. Like, she didn't do anything. She just stayed there and conserved energy and was like, I think it was okay, we'll see if you're there in the end, how that will go. And kind of a training race for her, getting ready for, you know, she really wants Paris-Roubaix and Flanders coming up. So this isn't really a huge target for her. And I think that's a lot of the reason why they gave freedom to Neve Fischer-Black, which was phenomenal. She looked amazing. I mean, she was like nose breathing, dropping everybody on the climb. Like, she looked incredible. And I hope that they're taking notes, because I feel like for Neve, like, she's been on that team for so long at this point and she rarely gets any opportunities. And when she does, it feels like they put her in opportunities that are just a little out of reach. And so that might impact the opportunities they give her in the future, and also like how she views herself as a rider. But she's so talented, and she works so hard, and she's so strong. And I think that a performance like this, you watch this and you're like, okay, going into the Ardennes, obviously they're going to be riding for Vollering, but like I want her to have some kind of freedom, because we know like she is capable of something more. It was cool to see her get some kind of opportunity on this course, even if it didn't mean that she, you know, she finished 10th still. And I want to talk about the group that finished, because I feel like the amount of climbers in that group versus sprinters is pretty impressive.
Oh, and Puck Peterson was incredible too. Again, like, phenomenal. That attack that she put in with, what was it, about 35Ks to go roughly? And she completely distanced the whole small reduced peloton. And at one moment I was like, is this it? But at that point there were just too many numbers from the teams that were there. So maybe if that had come on the next lap, I'd say she could have stuck with that gap. But and then to finish it off with third was brilliant.
Yeah, definitely. That was worth a mention. Like, she didn't just hide all day. Like, she was really active. That was a big amount of effort that she had to put in that move. And then to still finish on the podium is really impressive. And having Yara Kasselein there to work off against, I think that they are really nice. It's a really nice combo. I think it's working quite well at the moment for that team. And yeah, I feel like their team is one of the most exciting teams at the moment to watch, to see what they're going to do next. So I like that they're getting amongst it and they're not afraid to take it to those bigger teams.
With Puck, I feel like I wrote something in a piece yesterday after the race that, I don't know, may have riled some feathers. But I wrote that, you know, she's new to the road racing scene. The tactics aren't really something that she knows yet. And like we saw in Ronda van Drenthe, like, she's just going to go and go and go and go until it sticks. And it's not working at this point. And I'm curious to see if she continues with this tactic that she's got And like you said, Gracie, they are a really exciting team, and it is kind of how they function, to just go and go and go until it sticks. And it's worked. Erik Hasselin won a stage of the tour. But I also feel like that Puk has strengths outside of that tactic that could be beneficial for them in the upcoming classics. So will they let her just keep, you know, banging her head against the wall with this style of racing? Or will they be like, okay, we want you to conserve energy a bit more, because if she isn't constantly attacking and constantly trying to get off the front, in like Flanders, for example, she could be in that final group that goes into the really selective climbs at the end and actually play a part in the finale versus being really exciting throughout the race. And I do love that she was up there, and same with Drenthe. Like, she really pushed the pace at Drenthe. But, and I wrote a whole piece about how great the attackers were at this race. But I still think that, you know, there's a fine line between being the aggressor in the race and actually succeeding. And we talked about that a lot last year with Canyon SRAM. And I feel like Phoenix Cikunek is taking a page out of the Canyon SRAM book. And
yeah, because I was thinking exactly Jersey, the same. Yeah.
Because it's a New Jersey, it's exciting.
Yeah, no, I think that's a really good point, Abby.
Yeah, 100%. But what I do love about it is a lot of riders don't have that confidence or that instinct or lack of fear to do what they're doing. So I think when you have a group of young riders, this is actually a great approach while they're so young. Because let's remember, she's only 22, that in the future when they start, you know, making the attacks at the right points a bit deeper into the race, you know, learning to conserve, learning to use the people around them, they will be the rider, like a team, like Trek, that seem to pull it all together at the right time. But that instinct, that doesn't come so naturally to a lot of people, and that lack of fear, because a lot of the time, you know, you with young riders, it's kind of, I don't know if the mentality is still the same, but you're trying to survive a little bit too. You want to get your name out there and the jersey out there, but at the same time, you don't want to consistently be finishing 90th or something like that. So that's something I really love about this team. And the approach has clearly worked for Canyon SRAM. And now I think as they mature, we'll start to see them really being the key players in the finale. But for Phoenix at Cikunek, I think it's just maybe a couple of years till we see that. But they're on the right track, in my opinion.
I think you've both made really good points there. And just to find that balance between finding the limits, learning how to race on instinct, but then not doing it too much. And I think, you know, I think that we can give them a lot more leeway to just keep trying different stuff now, because they still can use that excuse of I'm learning a lot. I think it's becomes problematic when it's someone like Cassia that should already know by now, you know, like that. It's the difference in experience and age to then have that same argument. So yeah, I think with Puk though, like, she's very young. I think it would be cool to see her keep racing proactively like she is, but to rein it in quicker, you know, like to have a few races where she has to wait and be patient, and then other races where they can just let her off the leash and let her kind of do both for another couple of years to get that feel.
I wonder with that team as well, because there are a lot of young riders in there. I think Castellain is probably 26 now, right? But if they just need, I'd have to look at the roster and correct me if I'm wrong, but a more senior rider, someone who's in their 30s, who's been racing a long time, has been a captaincy role, like a rider. Kind of what actually AG Insurance Sudal did with Lee Moore, and that's why they brought her onto the team. And I think as well, when they initially signed Lotta and Tala, it was for that reason too. They're big talents, but they had this group of young riders and they just really needed, you know, mature, experienced riders to be there physically in person, not the DS over the radio saying, yeah, like, you know, rein it in a little bit, give them a bit of guidance in the race, and just to have that person there. Maybe that's where they're lacking.
Yeah, the oldest rider on the team is Senna Kant. in theory, but they have like a bunch of the cyclocross riders on the road roster that like don't cross over a ton. And she did Tour de France Femme with them last year. And I think that would have made a difference, but she's also, you know, primarily a cross rider. So I don't know how much that age and experience helps them on the road. Other than that, they've got a couple like pretty riders who have been around for a good amount of time, like Evie Kempers. She spent a couple years on CCC Live and Live Racing, so she was racing with Mariana Voss for a couple years, and it would be hard to be on a team with Voss and not pick up some tips and tricks, you know? So they have riders that somewhat experienced, but it is like the oldest rider on the team is Senna Cant by a lot. Like that the majority of their team is in there is like 24, 25, 22. So it's, yeah, they have Karina Schrempf, who's 29. That's like, and Paulina Roarkus. So those are kind of like the older riders on the team, which is, you know, not your Amanda Spratts and your Lizzie Deignans.
Yeah, but not in terms of age, I guess, but the quality of a captain. Not everyone has that capacity. And a lot of riders don't want to ever be captains. It's just something that, you know, doesn't interest them for one, or they just don't have the qualities you need. Going back to my original point, not everyone can be a captain. So maybe that's it. They need to just find a couple of really strong captains. I think that would be a big changing point.
A strong captain, but are definitely in a development year. Mm-hmm. I found it interesting, Movistar's tactics, coming off of Volta Extra Moderna, which they won, had Olivia Barrel up there in seventh, and that was their best result for the day. But they also are in this place in races like this where they don't have Van Vleuten anymore, and they're trying to figure out what a Van Vleuten-less Movistar looks like. And it was cool to see Marielle Majoring.
They're putting that big attack
off the front in the end. Yeah, and she's a really interesting rider that I was looking her up yesterday because I was like, I've only heard of her for the first time at Extremadura, which she won with a solo attack on the second stage ahead of Gaia Riolini. She's been racing for quite some time, but she really only started getting not even results, just kind of top tens in races in one days in Belgium and the Netherlands in 2022, and was picked up by ZAF last year. And then when everything happened with ZAF, she got picked up by Movistar. But she's got such an interesting trajectory where she's not one of those riders that came onto the scene and just like immediately started getting results and was picked up. She's 29. She's been around for a while, but she's not had any like breakthrough performances until this year and taking Extremadura in front of a really strong little Trek team and then going on a solo attack at the end of Trofeo Alfredo Binda. It was cool. I don't know how I feel about Movistar in a post Annemiek era. And I think, and especially with Leona Lippert not racing quite yet at this point in time, they're kind of left with some shoes to fill, and they're throwing what they can at the wall. And
I don't know if you guys saw it, but Measuring, she really reminds me of Annemiek, her riding style.
Yes, the way even she sits
the bike, the hair. It looked a lot like Annemiek. So I was thinking, I couldn't remember. I was trying to go through my memory Rolodex and being like, I'm pretty sure they have trained a bit together, like some training camp stuff. And it's funny, like if you train a lot with some people, you can kind of pick up their riding style and vice versa. So you do see like a lot of people picking up certain characteristics of how they ride bikes, and it's such a subtlety, but it's a bit like walking, you know, people can pick up a funny walk from someone, and bike riding's just like that. And I thought that when I was watching this race, like, wow, she looks so much like Annemiek on the bike. She wasn't wriggling around side to side as much, which is probably a good thing, but she certainly like she had the like that slightly longer reach, and then just a little bit of the posterior pelvic tilt or something, like her hips were just rotated back a little bit, and the hair was very similar, which just added to the whole thing. But also just the the moment that she attacked, it was like a little bit Annemiek-esque as well. Like it was kind of, it was a good moment. And thinking back to the days of Annemiek before she kind of got to that big climber status and the tour status, she was really good in the one day races and she was quite good with her instincts and stuff. Mm. So yeah, I think this could be a rider that we should keep on our radar to see, you know, what happens with her. And I really hope that she's being nurtured by a good coach and with some good leadership in that team, because she could have a really interesting future.
We kind of mentioned it already, but I want to go back a little bit to SC Works Pro Time, because they had Marlon Reuser in the race who just had COVID. So she's kind of on the comeback with her eye on bigger things to come in the future, but we still saw her put some efforts out there, try to get off the front, and it wasn't successful. I think she's like Capecchi, she's looking for things to come. But I also want to talk about how Capecchi didn't win. And I think we've talked about it a little bit, how, Lauren, you alluded to my theory that she's adapted herself to be better on the climb so much that she lost a little bit of the sprint. And I'm filing this performance away in my I told you so, because I think that if she isn't going to win in a sprint like this, I think that I'm right.
No, I completely agree with you. But my whole question actually around Capecchi is why she went there last minute, because she's already raced a ton. Like, you know, she was in the UAE tour. She's done a bunch of the classic races. She did Strada Bianchi, and that's why I thought, you know, for her, it made sense to sit out. I mean, I don't think she's going to be doing Bruges de Panne on Thursday, but surely she'll rock up for Gent-Wevelgem. And then Dwaze d'Or Flandern, I don't know if she would do that race, but then it's Flanders and then it's Paris-Roubaix. So for me, I'm like, you know, her and Wiebes were at, what is that race that they went on to? Nicora.
Look at that course there.
Yep. Yeah, well, she had a brilliant performance there. Yeah, I don't know why. Like, it's not like they don't have enough riders. So she's obviously put her hand up for it, maybe to take another win. But, you know, for a rider like her to go and get second, that's not why she showed up.
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing. Like, why is she there? Is it just like they just need another starter, or do they feel like she's on a roll? But I don't disagree with you guys that she's lost a bit of her pop in her sprint, but I think she was just a bit tired because she just toweled everyone in Belgium days before, which was, I loved that race watching it. That was really good. But it's also a very specific finish at Binder, actually. So I think that was a good demonstration of pure physiology, you know, like, we can also talk a lot about Balsamo and her qualities in that she's, yeah, of course she's very fast, but like this sprint actually seems to be really perfect for her physiology. So I think it was a bit of a mix of maybe Capecchi's lost a bit of pop. I think she was definitely a bit tired. And I think that this sprint actually just suits Balsamo a bit better. And actually she probably doesn't get that many shots at a drag uphill sprint, because you don't see it as much on camera, but it actually goes up quite a decent amount from that last corner. So it's not a flat sprint at all. So yeah, I think there was a few factors there in the end. Cause I still would have put my money on Capecchi to win, considering everything she's been doing so far. So I think that was actually good for her to be beaten, to just show the rest of us that she's still somewhat human, and, you know, has moments of fatigue or moments where she doesn't quite have the physiology to match someone that a finish really suits. So yeah, I thought it was a good outcome for lots of reasons.
For my draft as well, I have to drop that in there. I had three in the top 10.
I specifically didn't tally up the draft because my ego can't take it at the moment. No, I feel like it was a choice to put Capecchi in the race, and I don't back it, because I want to see her really throw down at Paris-Roubaix, and and you need to have these weeks off. I mean, there's a reason that there is a ton of the top riders not currently racing. They're all training and prepping for the races to come. And I think for Capecchi being thrown into this race, having to travel all the way down to Italy after racing on Wednesday, I don't know. I don't think it was really that necessary. And I think with Capecchi not in the race, we maybe would have seen more effort going into Niamh Fisher-Black as a rider to win, you know? And so it would have changed the tactics entirely without changing the result, but would have changed the race. And they have a ton of riders on their team.
That's what I was about to say. Yeah, it's not like they're struggling with riders. Like, they've got heaps of talent. Even their B-list team is A-list.
Like, look, I hope it's not going to be detrimental to the rest of the spring season. One race, you never know how it can impact, but it's just the travel and things like that, you know, the extra travel, the coming back. She's not down to race Stepana, so that's good, obviously. But yeah, I'm hoping, because I would like to see Capecchi win, like you said, I think last year, Gracie, win Flanders in the World Championship jersey on home soil would be pretty cool. But I think that Paris-Roubaix is something that she will go for Flanders, but it will be Roubaix above Flanders if she had to choose, I would say. And maybe we'll see Vollering. Yeah, maybe Vollering's going to be again at her best by Flanders.
Yeah, I don't know. I just think I found it quite interesting having her in the race and not having her not actually feature. Like, I wrote that she was the third most seen SD Works rider, but not even. You had, you know, Niamh was the most seen SD Works Pro Time rider on the road. And then Roycer, because she's hard to miss and she threw down a couple attacks. And then there were a couple other riders like floating around near the front, but Capecchi, because it wasn't, I kind of like forgot she was even in the race for a while. And she is down to race Gent-Wevelgem this weekend. So that's a provisionary start list, and it is probably going to change, but I would be shocked if she didn't race Gent-Wevelgem. So yeah, fascinating stuff. I think overall I loved this race, and this edition of this race just like drove home why I love this race. And that's because it's a race where the course is like exciting enough that things happen all day long, but we still had like a finish. The entire time you saw these riders go off the front, and every single one of them would have been thinking they had a shot. Like, every single one of them would have gone thinking there is a chance, because this race has come down to a solo attack. It did last year when Turin Van Anroy won, but it still came down to a reduced bunch sprint, and that made Balsamo the most deserving winner on the day, but it also gave us a ton of action like from start to finish, and I thought that was great. I think the only bummer is that we only got 44 kilometers of live coverage, which is, you know, not a lot, and I think if we'd seen more before that, we would have seen a lot more from the rest of Little Trek, because by the time the coverage picked up, it was really only Gaia, Shirin, and Balsamo left in that group. And we saw Shirin do like a ton of work, but like Brody, Lizzie, and
Spratty was there.
Brody, Lizzie, we saw Spratty. Spratty, yeah. She was in there for a bit when the coverage first started as well. But for Lizzie and Brody, I think the two of them spent a lot of the early race on the front doing a lot of work. And we just didn't get to see that because there was barely any live coverage. So that was kind of a bummer.
Yeah. I thought this race usually has a bit more. Like, do we get to see 70 or 80 kilometers of it last year? I can't remember now, but maybe it's also due to the fact that I don't know if it has something to do with the fact that there is no longer that GCN app, although it was on Eurosport. So
this race is like it's a beast all its own. It has completely different organizers than most of the other spring races. And
well, I'm actually like, I don't know if we're done talking about this World Tour race. I'm looking forward to Bruges-Stepana, because if you look at the start list, all the top sprinters are showing up. So this might be the first sprint potentially with all the sprinters there for the year.
This is such a great race, because do you guys remember the one year when there were crosswinds? There was like a selection of just all the best sprinters, and then Grace Brown
rode off. Yeah, yeah, yeah. That really put her name into the
This race definitely, like, it favors the sprinters, but I feel like with that crosswind section, there's still like, will it be a sprint? I don't know. But yeah, you're right, Lauren. We've got Cool, Balsamo, and Wiebes all on the start list for this race, which means that we're finally gonna get to see the three of them up against each other, and I am stoked.
Chloe Dygert's on the list too.
Yeah, but she's been on the start list for like every single race so far this year.
Has she? I didn't know that.
So I would be really surprised if they took her, to be honest. I think that she's just like full all in for the Olympics. And she races so infrequently on the road that if they were to throw her into a spring classic, I would have thought that maybe Binda would have been the one because it's, you know, on the tamer side. But like, again, Wellgum with the crosswinds and with those train tracks like right near the finish, just the likelihood of an accident happening is way higher, especially if you don't have those bunch skills. So I would be shocked to see Dygert in the race, but I don't know. Maybe they will.
And plus, it's like, it's still like really cold and you can't wear shorts that short when it's Oh, sorry. I shouldn't have said that. But no, I think you're right. Like, it's most of these one day classics are just too high risk. So I think you're right, Abby. It'd be unlikely to see Dygert, I think, at most of these races.
For the same reason that we probably won't see Van Dijk.
Yeah. Probably.
Speaking of Van Dijk, won another time trial at the Tour de Normandy. Mm-hmm. And won the time trial and won over Rhianna Marcus. So a rider who she's actually up against for an Olympic spot.
By a good chunk as well, over such a short distance.
Yeah, by a good chunk.
Yep. What was the distance and the gap?
I think it was like, was it 19 seconds?
The time trial was 10 kilometers long and it had a climb like right out the start, not a big one, but a little bit of a climb, and then a little climbing in the first half before it kind of flattened out. And yeah, she won by 19 seconds over Rhianna Marcus. It's strategic seeing her enter the racing season as she is targeting the time trials in these early, you know, lower class races like this one. And I think for this race in particular, it really kind of like Extremadura, but to a larger extent, there was a bunch of top teams here with good riders. Like Little Trek obviously had Ellen and they had a couple of their newer riders as well. But like Visma Lisa Bike was at this race with Marcus, obviously, and they didn't race Trofeo Alfredo Binda. But they opted to go here instead. So I think that I don't know if Visma Lisa Bike is maybe trying to, like, they said last year that they wanted to reimagine how the team races, and maybe they're taking them to these races instead of the World Tour races currently happening in an attempt to, I don't know, try something. But they, from what I heard on the ground in the final stage of the race on Sunday, Little Trek and Visma Lisa Bike were in like a standoff against each other. And neither of them wanted to work. And so a pretty big group got away up the front and Ellen ended up losing the overall.
Is that what happened?
Kind of a weird behavior.
Because she was holding onto it by 1 second. And was that to Marcus or who was that to?
No, that was to
maybe someone who won the first stage.
1 second down in front of Victor Berto of Cofidis.
Yeah.
The French rider from Cofidis. And then 13 seconds behind her was Marcus, with Lauren Stevens 20 seconds down behind them. So
because the rider who ended up winning, I was like, I didn't know who the rider was, actually, to be honest. I had to do like a little search.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And she finished 3 seconds down, like from Josie Nelson on the final stage. But because Ellen was a minute down in the group behind them, like, they were in such a standoff and neither of them would work that they lost a minute to a group of riders that had two riders that were above that could have jumped Ellen in the overall. So it just really, like, tactically, it was a weird move for them to do that.
Yeah, you wouldn't, I think, see that happening in a World Tour race.
No, not at all. I mean, yeah. And, you know, speaking of time trials, Vuelta Femenina starts off with a 16K individual time trial, and that's kind of before Olympic selection really starts. So that's going to be a huge race. You know, and the longest, it's the longest stage race we have on the calendar this year at 8 stages. Yeah, to start off with a 16K ITT, one of the only individual time trials that we have in a world tour event is before the Olympics take place. It's going to be
in the selection period.
I see a lot of big riders show up to that race.
You're going to have all the TT specialists show up.
Yeah, and especially the Americans who, you know, they have two spots for the Olympics, and reading over the criteria for who's going to get that second spot next to, in theory, Chloe Dygert, they're really leaning towards a time trial specialist to take that second spot. So for a 16-kilometer time trial, any American who can enter this race, like Corinne, for example, Kristen Faulkner, they're going to be looking at this time trial like, this is it for Olympic selection.
I think then it will go, Faulkner is a really good time trialist. But
is she?
No, yeah, she's pretty good. I think she got, did she get sixth at the 2022 World Championships or something? She was right up there, definitely top 10. But then again, it's only
how technical the course is.
But will the US only send one person for the time trial, and that's Dygert. She's got an automatic spot, right?
They have two time trial spots and two road spots. So
will they fulfill both time trial spots?
Yeah, so from reading over the criteria, because they just changed it recently, it seems like Dygert gets one of the TT spots, one of the road spots, and then the other spot for both events is going to be for a time trial specialist. Regardless, like the road spot is just going to go to whoever gets the other TT spot.
Okay.
But they want it to be a TTer that gets that second spot.
So two athletes going. And Lauren Stevens is really throwing her name in the hat.
She won the second stage of this race.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a bummer that she's on a team that isn't going to be selected for the Vuelta Femenina. They've already announced the teams, and Siniska is not one of them. So she's kind of on the back foot when it comes to that. But she's still, and she's not had great time trial performances. But now she's won a stage of this, and also won, I think it was Almeria earlier in the year. Mm-hmm. So with solo moves. So yeah.
Yeah.
But the Vuelta looks like it's going to be an awesome race. There's like the opening time trial, and then the second, third, fourth, and seventh stages are like really great sprint/attacky type stages. And then we have two like kind of climby stages in 5 and 6. And the final stage, the eighth stage, is a beast. There's like 21K of climbing in an 89, I think, kilometer long stage. And the second climb is the finishing climb of the day, and it's 13 kilometers long. So it's going to be like pretty much all come down to the wire like last year.
Did we do like diaries last year, or was it the year before? I think
we've only done the Giro. Have we only done the Giro and the Tour for the diaries?
I don't know. This might be an interesting one.
I'll put the feelers out.
Yeah. Just because going back to what you were saying, I think the last races for selection, this will probably be one of the last ones, I would say, this tour. And just in general, I think it's going to be a great tour. So, and you're going to get a top quality field. Okay. I think end of April it starts.
Not only is it a pretty instrumental race in terms of Olympic selection with the time trial, it's also the first real stage race we have for the women on the World Tour calendar coming up in April. It's like a week after the Ardennes wrap up and the one days wrap up. So I reckon we'll see like Demi go straight from the Ardennes into the Vuelta like she did last year. Yeah. All right. So coming up this week, we got Bruges-Japana on Thursday, and then Gent-Wevelgem
Sunday.
And then Gent-Wevelgem on Sunday, and Gent-Wevelgem kind of kicks off the real meat of the classic season.
Are you going to go on site to any of these, Lauren? Because they're pretty close to where you live.
I'll go to the start of Bruges-Japana because, I mean, I'm in Bruges. So I'll definitely go there to catch the start. And then Gent-Wevelgem, no. But maybe I'll go to the start of Flanders in Oudenaarde because that will be fun. And I've actually never been on course for Flanders before. So if I can make it happen, I will. So we'll see. And then Paris-Roubaix. I went last year and that was really cool. I wasn't on course. I was at the velodrome. but still to be there was really special. So I'm going to try and do that again. So that's definitely one of the perks of living in Belgium is really it is at your doorstep.
Someday I'm going to make it to Paris-Roubaix. Maybe next year.
You've got something pretty cool lined up that week. I think I'd pick Mexico next year.
I'm super excited you're going to be on the ground, Lauren. You're going to have to pick up some, like, I don't know, try to get the goss.
I will.
Get some good stories.
Look, one of my goals is to get Capecchi to sign. I think I said it last year. I really want her to sign this little, I've got a world champions jersey for my son. And because he's Belgian, she's a Belgian legend and will be for all of time, forever, actually. So that's like on my to-do list to try and get Capecchi to sign this jersey. It'd be pretty cool if she won like Paris-Roubaix and then reached over the barriers and signed it. So, and my husband's like secretly a big Capecchi fan. So he even got his fanboy shot last year with her.
Wow. Should we wrap up the episode?
With what we're obsessed with?
Do you know what I'm obsessed with?
Miss Americana, like me last week? No? Yes?
Oh, I watched it. I watched it on the trainer yesterday and I cried and I've seen it so many times, but I still cried. It's so good. I just love her. I don't know how you can ever see that. I've seen reviews where it's like, oh, she just wants you to see her a certain way, which like, yes, everything is like, of course she wants you to see her a certain way. But I just love that film. It's so good.
You get, I think from the film, like obviously I'm don't know as much about Taylor Swift as you do, nowhere near, maybe 0.5% as much. But you get a real feel for who she is as a person and how she operates and how she works. And man, that woman works hard. Like a new artist worked hard, but goddamn, like it's really on another level. And just how she creates her music as well, I found that super interesting. Her views and how like there was just like this switch in, I guess, when was the movie made? 2020? And I guess it was filmed 2018, 19, where she has this shift and realizes that she has this ability and this power to use her platform for good. And she finally takes a political stance, which I thought was, there's obviously a shift in her maturity and how she views herself at that point in her life. You know,
I think recently she pulled Miss Americana from Netflix and now it's on Disney Plus, and that has cost Netflix heaps of money.
Oh, wow. Really?
Yeah. Cause apparently there was a show that Netflix funded and it had a joke about her in it. That was actually quite insulting.
Yeah. Ginny and she picked up on it. And,
yeah. The joke was something like you go through shirts like Swift. And she replied like, yeah, don't love your extremely dated and sexist joke. And yeah, it's just like, regardless of that particular story, like you're saying, Lauren, she's just sticking up for herself more now, and I think that has such weight with women of all ages.
Yeah, I mean, it's for her, I feel like she grew up, like she said in the film, she grew up in the time where the Dixie Chicks got canceled for one comment that they made that was like an offhand remark, a joke really at the start of a show. And they were like fully ripped apart for that. And especially coming from the country scene, for her going in and being like a young woman in the music industry. I'm glad that she finally feels that she's able to speak her feelings loudly. And like, for me, one of the most impactful moments of that film is also only a 30-second clip of her in the car talking about, you know, her body and her history with eating disorders. And like that 30 seconds is huge. That's a huge moment for her as a human being, but also for any woman watching that film that has experienced those things. And the fact that it wasn't made a huge deal of, that it was just kind of a passing remark, I feel like made it even more impactful for me. If it had been made into a big deal, I think I maybe would have shied away from it a little more, but it was like an acknowledgement that it was a thing and then moved on. And I felt like that was, yeah, that really hit home for me.
I love it. She's like, we don't do that anymore.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. No, that definitely hit home for me. But now knowing more about Taylor Swift, I totally understand why I also like that she's with Travis is I feel like, is this the first relationship she's been able to like just own it and be out there in the public and proud that she's dating this guy and actually she's just being herself?
Yeah, it's great.
And not giving two fucks. Yeah,
and he doesn't give two fucks either. And I feel like it's just like
she needs a guy like that, or she's actually needed a guy like that, not to like hide in the shadows. Like I had no idea she was dating that other guy for so long.
Yeah, they were together for like 6 years, and they only were seen in public like twice.
Yeah, how is that possible?
I don't know. It's weird, and I think she's got some trauma from it. I mean, I know I would, but that's not what I'm obsessed with. I mean, I am. I'm always obsessed with Taylor Swift, but I am also obsessed with Jessie Diggins and her win yesterday. Well, her win on Sunday, the skate final of the World Cup. She won the final distance race of the World Cup season and won the overall. And it was going into the final weekend. It was like really close on points. And then she didn't have a great sprint race and she had a decent 10K classic. Like she's not great at classic, getting way better though, but and then to like take it home with a win on Sunday and also like win the overall and her speech at the end, I'm going to actually throw in a clip of her speech because I think that every single human being on the planet Earth needs to hear her speech or her interview from after.
Here she is, Jessie Diggins.
Last World Cup of the season and you take the victory and the overall. How was this?
Oh, shoot. It was really emotional. I was out putting glitter on everyone, and as you can see, they had a little surprise for me, too. It's been a hard year, and today my only goal was to have the most fun, and I really did. I was smiling at the coaches out there, and I just wanted to finish with nothing left, and that was really painful, but it was so fun to go out there and just try to ski hard and ski well and ski a brave race. And that's all I wanted to do. So huge thanks to the techs. They made amazing skis. It feels really cool to end the season as one big team.
It really looked like you had decided today that this, I'm taking this.
I just wanted to leave it all out there because I know that when I do that, I can walk away proud. If I'm first, if I'm last, it doesn't matter. If I give it everything I have, then I'm going to be proud of what I put out there. And I wanted to make the techs proud so they could see I was skiing a gutsy race. And that was it. So, yeah, I'm really happy. And now I'm ready to go home.
I watched it when you reposted it, and it's good. It's what sport should be about.
It should be about hugging your competitors and just giving it everything you got. I don't know. I like her attitude. I think that she's really good for Nordic skiing. She's good for American sport. She's good for women in general. And so I like that she's had this success because it means that it's put her on a stage where people will listen to her. But I think that, you know, she deserves that spotlight because of who she is as a person. And I could say the same thing about Taylor Swift. And I wish that there was somebody in women's cycling. Someone asked me, like, who can you compare to Jessie Diggins in women's cycling? And honestly, I don't have an answer because I don't think that there's anyone in women's cycling who is as outspoken positively, but also like negatively. Like, she's been really, really honest about her eating disorder and recovering from her eating disorder and having relapses and stuff like that. And she's really honest about her mistakes and mistakes that she's made. She always owns up to mistakes. She never has excuses if she has a bad race or anything. She always takes it all on her own. And there's just so much about her that I think like every sport could learn from. And yeah, I can't think of anyone in women's cycling who is that good and also that
An athlete, like a champion.
Champion mentally, physically, yeah. Emotionally.
Yeah, it would be. Would be cool to see it in cycling, but I think it's like less likely because of the team nature of our sport. Like, it's not easy to do what she's done, but she probably has never felt as threatened in her position in her sport. And I think that it's pretty tough in cycling to expose some vulnerabilities because then you feel like people will use that against you, even within your own circle. So, yeah, whether that's an unfounded threat or not, I feel like a lot of people st would still feel that that threat was still there. And I think that would be a tough thing to overcome. That was definitely something I experienced.
Yeah, and that's what I quite often we don't see these things spoken about till after an athlete retires, and then quite often they become an ambassador for the sport and an advocate for the sport, but it only comes later because of this fear that's created around keeping your job, which is something we've spoken about before. You don't want to be that person who's too loud, because teams talk, directors talk, and that's just unfortunately where we're at with that.
I'm struggling to think of what I'm obsessed with this week. There's always something that I'm really into, but I don't know. I feel like I'm actually obsessed with my new job. I'm part-time. I just got a new part-time role with Oz Cycling, and it's a role that's hard to describe, but effectively a bit of peer support, bit of an advocate for the athletes. It's a role that's going to evolve, but it's very much along similar lines to what I got to do with the Cyclists Alliance. But now I get to do it in a system instead of outside of one. And I'm really excited about that. I'm really optimistic for the future of sport in Australia too. So it's exciting to feel like part of this new wave push towards the Brisbane 2032 Olympics. A great time to be a woman in sport, both as a competitor, but now also on the other side of the fence. I think there's more and more women in leadership roles. So yeah, I'm really looking forward to what's to come, and hopefully I can help some of the Aussie athletes along the way.
I'm excited to see how this role evolves for you, Gracie, because I think you're just going to be perfect in it. And it's great to see Oz Cycling, how the whole system is evolving since the last Olympics. Some huge changes have been made, and there was a bit of disruption, but it looks like for the better. And it looks like there are more and more women going into to these higher roles, because the CEO is a woman. And from what I can tell, she's doing some good things there. So that's really good to hear because, yeah, I went through the system as well. So it's always good to see positive action and change there. What am I obsessed with? The book that we suggested for the book club. I've got other obsessions, but that's the first one that's coming to mind, The Huntress by, is it Kate Quinn? If anyone listened to the podcast, I think last week we decided we would create a little bit of a book club, and Abby is really deep into the book somehow. Okay, she's finished it. I am 30% of the way through, according to my Kobo, which is pretty good for me considering I don't have as much free time at the moment, but I'm managing to squeeze in a little bit of reading every day, so that's been good. That is the only obsession I can think of right now. There'd be something more interesting, but
Listening
yeah.
to it as an audiobook, so I'm burning through it pretty quickly while I
Ah,
do other stuff.
smart. And I'm also obsessed with Zwift. I Zwifted 4 times last week. I'm so proud of myself.
Wow, good job.
It's been a long time since I've been so consistent. I think I'm on a 7 weeks streak according to Zwift. This is not a sponsorship plug, but it's been really good, and I'm just glad that I finally had some like consistency because I've really missed that outlet. So it's just nice to do it, and also starting to set some fitness goals for later in the year. I've got a friend who's going to help me try and achieve them, so I might speak a little bit more about that eventually, maybe after your own trip.
And with Zwifting at the moment, are you just picking fun workouts as you feel
Yeah.
you're not like, don't have
No
a plan? You're
structure.
just, Yeah, cool.
No, but nothing like too intensive yet. Nothing like in the orange or the yellow, whatever it's called. I think it's
Yeah.
yellow, FTP. So nothing too hard. So I'm just enjoying it. The goal is just to get on the bike basically and enjoy it. And then maybe some hard work will start in about a month. But I'm very aware as well, like I don't want to overdo it because for anyone listening who's breastfed before or just had a lot of stress in your life, that can lower your milk production. And I've had pretty stressful past year. So I want to try and breastfeed the little guy for at least 6 months. That's the goal this time. It was a year with my first son, but I'm a bit more realistic with little Louis. So that's why I'm trying to keep it also on a bit of a lower level.
Yeah. Well, good job.
Thank you.
All right. Well, we'll be back next week to talk about Bruges de Panne and Gent Wevelgem. It's going to be a fun episode. Thanks, you two, for putting up with me today.
No.
I do have one more obsession, and it's Abby's t-shirt collection. You always got some cool t-shirt on, and today it's a really good one. Shania Twain. It's got a
Oh my
horse on it
God.
even. Amazing.
Where do you get your t-shirts?
This one's a funny story. There's a Instagram account called Taylor Swift Styled, and she, whenever Taylor Swift ventures out into the world or during her tour or anything, she does deep dives into the pieces that she wears. And Taylor Swift was seen one day with Blake Lively wearing this t-shirt, and I bought it.
Love it. Love it.
It's
It's pretty
good.
rare that I can afford things that Taylor Swift wears. And so when I can, I'm like, yeah, I'll get that t-shirt. Plus, I love Shania Twain. So win-win. Lila, what are you doing? I can hear her pulling pictures off of the
She
wall.
just ran. She just ran behind.
She looks so naughty.
Yeah.
The pigtails just really set
Yeah.
it off.